second, talk to yourself, and here we go. So the topic of this month's call is leadership peak performance, and this topic is especially enjoyable for me to talk about because it's very personal for me. But I think what you're going to find is that these concepts are a pretty big deal for you at a pretty high level. You know, first thing I should jump in and put the question out there is, well, what is it? What does the phrase peak performance really mean? You hear words like that thrown around there, and I'm going to tell you how I define it so that you have a definition for the rest of this call. To me, peak performance is very simply, it's when you're at a level 10. It's when things seem to be going well, you're on fire, you're in the zone, and if you understand what I'm talking about, you can probably think back to a time where you've had level 10 experiences. In fact, I'd invite you to do that right now. I want you to think back to the last time in your business or even in your life. I don't really care what it was. Just think about a time when you were operating at a really high level. You were absolutely in the zone. And I want you to think for a minute about how that affected you. Go back and actually embody who you were, what it felt like, what things looked like, what you said, what you saw, what you heard, everything about that moment. You know, when you think about when you're operating at a level 10, and if you can think about an experience or time in your life when you've been at that level, you realize that it affects everything you do so dramatically. I mean, think about it this way. You can also probably go back and think about a time when you weren't operating at a level 10. In fact, why don't you do that for a minute? Why don't you go back, and I want you to envision a time when, you know, maybe you showed up to a meeting and you were just totally unprepared. Maybe you had to run an interview or a training and your head was just somewhere else. I want you to think about that for a minute. I want you to actually go back to that place where maybe you weren't at a 10, maybe you were at a 3. And think about how that affected you for a second. Think about how it shifted your emotions. You know, maybe you had stuff going on, but look at what it did to you. Think about how it affected your performance. You know, for a lot of you as managers, it doesn't matter if you have 100 people or you got one person in front of you. You have to perform. When you're running a meeting, a training, advanced training, or you just have an important one-on-one conversation, I want you to think about a time when you weren't at a 10, maybe you were at a 3, and think about this, because here's why this call really matters for you, is that when you're not at a level 10, I want you to think about how that ends up affecting your ability to help other people. And it's a pretty big deal, because when it costs you your ability to help other people, now the problems that you have when you can't operate at a level 10 or you can't figure out how to get back to that place, the problems are like exponential. It's like a ripple effect that can cost you. So, you know, I don't think I need to spend a lot of time telling you how important it is to know how to get into a peak state. And if you sit here and you think about why is it so important, really, it comes down to this. If you think about everything that you do, you know, you are the common denominator. It doesn't matter if you're running a meeting, you're having a one-on-one conversation. Your mental state of mind, your ability to get into a peak level, that's the common denominator that affects everything else. And sometimes it's good to ask the question, well, what is it that stops us from operating at a level 10? And, you know, I don't think it's real complicated. I think it's really just one of two or three things, maybe. In my opinion, I think that what stops us from operating at a level 10 is we just forget to make it a priority. Think about that for a second. Think about the last time that you ran a meeting and, you know, you got so caught up in, you know, the stuff that you had to do to be prepared, whatever the meeting was, right? And sometimes you just forget to make it a priority to really get yourself in the right frame of mind. Sometimes we just forget, right? Or I think also sometimes we don't operate at a level 10 because we're not aware of maybe how to do it. Maybe we don't have some simple tools, or we're not aware of how simple it is. So what you're going to get today is I'm going to share with you some patterns. And this topic is something I've really become obsessed with, and I know a lot of you know that. You know, I'm the guy who goes out and I run hundreds of miles at a time, and I do that because I am obsessed with how to get to a place where I can get in the zone at any time. And the last thing I'm going to do is tell you that I operate at a level 10 every second of my life. The only reason I can share some of the stuff with you today is because I've had to use it to pull myself up from a 2 or a 3 or a 4. Now, before we dive into the content for today's call where I share with you these patterns and just some cool stuff that you can do and you can bring to your people to help everybody operate at that peak performance level, I want to give some of you a chance, if you want to volunteer, to share how you use the information from the last call, and I'll give you the 30-second review. On the last call, we talked about world-class coaching conversations, and we talked about when you listen, there's two layers of listening. We talked about the idea of listening deeply and also using questions, and at the end of the call, I presented the 5 key questions that can help you in any coaching relationship. And so I want to open this up here, and if you want to share an example, and I was really excited, even a little overwhelmed, how many of you sent emails. And so instead of me calling out, because I know so many of you ended up, you know, creating awesome results from the last call, I just want to open it up. We're going to take maybe 3 minutes here, and I just want to give anyone who wants to chime in, I want to encourage you to do your best to do it in, like, you know, 30 seconds or less. If you can give one example of how you took the information from the last call and you put it to work to generate a positive result. If you'd like to chime in and share, here's what I'd like you to do is press *7, and it will open up your own line so that you can share. So again, if you have an example of how you use the info from the last call, we're just going to take a couple minutes here. Press *7 if you want to jump on real quickly and just share how you created any type of positive result. And this is really beneficial, because if you're not someone who's sharing, listen to how somebody put the ideas to work, because you might get an idea that you overlooked about how to go out and take the info from the last call. So anybody want to chime in? Again, press *7, and if anyone wants to share any result they generated from the last call, I know a handful of you sent me emails, but this would be a great time to share that out loud so other people can get an idea of how to make sure they put this stuff to work.
Hello, this is Jack from Wichita Falls, and I was in, sorry.
Oh, no, go ahead.
And I listened to it a little bit later. I listened to it on the internet, and that same day, I think it was maybe an hour or so later, I had a rep call me, and I put in the last steps, like the last things that you said, the 5 steps, or 5 communication thingies. Anyway, I put it in effect, like, right then and right there, and you're right, it was really, really fast. Like, you don't have to, it doesn't take that long to go through it. And I think the following 2 days later, she sold, like, she's on the phone, she got her demo set, she's communicating with me, and, like, she sold a kitchenette set and some flatware, like, right after that, on how, like, getting back on the ball. She hadn't done anything before that for, like, 2 weeks, so it was awesome.
That's awesome. Congrats to you for putting that to work. Thanks for sharing that. That's super cool. Who else would like to share? Any examples of how you put to work the info from the last call?
I'll share. Hey, John, this is Derek Serbin from Lubbock.
Yeah, go ahead, Derek.
Yeah, I loved the message last time, and I had a chance to meet with one of my guys who went out and ran a branch last summer, and he was the top branch in the division and was kind of hesitant about running another branch because he wanted to intern this summer. So I took him out for lunch, and we had like a 2-hour, 3-hour PC, and I basically used, you know, the quality questions and the deep listening to really help him see that, you know, running a second branch this summer would probably be the best thing in his interest. And now he's committed. Now he's ready to rock and roll. He's coming to the office, running interviews, and sitting in on training. So he's completely ready to just crush what he did last summer, all because of the quality questions.
That's awesome, Derek. Well, congrats to you for having the patience to put that to work. I know it's a little bit different than just trying to tell someone what to do using questions. That's awesome. Thanks for sharing that. Again, congrats. We'll take maybe one more. Can I get one more example of anyone who put to use the info from the last call?
Hey, John, Ben Taggett.
Hey, go ahead.
Yeah, actually, I didn't get to really implement it right away, but I'll tell you directly, last night after a division meeting we had, I met with two of my top branch candidates separately for about 2 hours apiece, and literally the whole conversation was questions on my part, and we worked them through, you know, their whole push schedule, their whole plan, everything that they're doing, their whole schedule in the office, and it really allowed them to see more of the benefit of what they're doing as opposed to me telling them what they needed to do. And they came across their own conclusions, which are, you know, all of our people always know the right answers. They just need to hear themselves say it. So the questions just really helped them come to that conclusion.
Yeah, that's awesome. That's awesome. Ben, thanks for sharing that. Again, thanks for the rest of you who sent emails or sent me notes after the call. Again, ultimately, the info that I'm sharing, I'm just giving you info that I've learned from other people, and it's all about you putting it to work, and eventually you know, turn around and teach this stuff to your leaders, and it'll help them. So that's awesome. Well, we're going to dive in now. We're going to talk about three qualities or even patterns of peak performance leaders. And what's exciting about this info is, as I share it with you, as always, there's a couple ways you can listen to this. One is, how can you use this? But the other is, how can you translate this for your people? And I'm going to even help you with that. So here's the first quality that I want to talk about today. And it's the first quality or pattern of a peak performance leader. And it's this, that they mentally rehearse their desired future. If you want to write that phrase down, we're going to talk a little bit about this and what this means and how to put it to work and why it's a big deal. They mentally rehearse their desired future. You know, when you think about it, it's kind of a fancy way of saying they set goals. But I'll tell you, a lot of people set goals and they don't do anything with it. Or when they set a goal, they don't get engaged. And I believe that there's really three qualities that you got to apply when you rehearse your desired future. And when you rehearse your desired future mentally, which means you literally let it play out in your head. This is something that I first learned when I was selling knives. Dan used to lead me through an exercise that I did during push periods. But when you rehearse, there's really three qualities you want to use. One of them is precision. The other is frequency, and the other is feeling. Precision, frequency, and feeling. Let's talk about this for a second. Why is precision so important? Why is precision so important? Well, the reason why is because whenever we have a thought, now I'm about to get into some stuff right here that for a lot of people, if you don't stay tuned, this stuff can sound like really complicated stuff, but I'm going to tell you, I'm going to keep it really simple. But we're going to talk about how the brain works, because when you understand that the brain is just like a computer, you can reprogram it. And see, the deal is, whenever you have a thought, right, you create a little electric wave in your head. I told you this stuff gets pretty deep, but we're going to keep it simple. And here's the deal, is the more precise your thought is, meaning if it's the same, if it's consistent, right, the more precise it is, the easier it is for your brain to have that thought again the next time. You follow me? So if you rehearse in your head what you want to see happening in your office, for example, over the next week, over the next month, or over the next year, well, the more precision you use, the more that picture is crystal clear in your mind's eye, right? That what happens is it becomes easier and easier to have that same thought again. And what I can promise you is this, is if you can get to a place where you make a decision, you say, here's what I want to see have happen in my business this week, or even just today, right? And the more you allow that to play out, kind of like a movie in your head, and you do it precisely, you'll be blown away at how easy it is to get back to that vision again and again. How many of you have ever done this? How many of you have ever set a goal, and then you didn't really think about the goal again, and you it floated away. You never thought of it again. I think we've all done that. And one reason why is because we didn't think of it with enough precision that it became real easy to think of it again and again and again. See, the subconscious needs that precision. Now, I also mentioned frequency. Why does that matter? Well, because the more frequently you envision something, that's another thing that contributes to the brain being able to get to that thought again and again and again and again. And this is a concept I first learned, actually 10 years ago, I was selling Cutco, and Dan Cassetta invited this guy into our office. This guy's name was Pete Drouvé. He ended up being my first sales coach. I was 17 years old, and here I have my own coach, right? And Pete comes into the office, and he taught us to envision what we wanted to see happening. And this was totally goofy stuff for so many people in the office, but I was able to get over it because I sell knives. It's weird enough. I'm just going to do more weird things to see what I can create in my life, right? And he had us do this exercise where we envisioned over and over and over and over and over again what we wanted to create. And for me, it was just winning a silver cup. That's what it was. And I'll tell you that exercise to me was the single greatest tool that I had to elevate my performance when I was just a young sales rep. And one of the reasons why it worked is because I recreated that vision not only with precision, but every day I would do it multiple times an hour. I would just go back to that place. So frequency. And the last thing we're going to talk about here is with feeling. Why is it important to do it with feeling? I'm going to give you some action steps to put this to work, but first I want to give you the foundation. See, what happens is when we mentally rehearse our future, which is another way of saying envision or think about what you want to create, if you actually allow yourself to elicit some emotion, I'm going to tell you what happens is that emotion, it really strengthens in your mind that vision in a way that nothing else will. It does it in a way that it's like irreversible. Okay? When you rehearse how you want something to happen, but you also rehearse how you want to feel, it will tap into a special place inside of you because emotions drive us. If you think about it, everything you do every minute of every day is driven by some type of emotion. And if you actually rehearse how you want to feel when you get to a certain place or as you go through your day or as you go through your week, you'll be blown away at how that transforms your drive, right? It'll absolutely transform you. So the first pattern that we've been talking about here is mentally rehearsing your desired future. And I'm going to give you right now some very simple action steps, because it's one thing for you to hear what I'm saying and go, okay, you know, I think this kind of makes sense, but it's another thing to know how to put it to work immediately and easily. So here's the first action step I'm going to share with all of you, and I'm also going to share with you where I first learned this exact exercise. It was from a book called Psycho Cybernetics, kind of a goofy title, but Psycho Cybernetics, it was written, I think, like 50 years ago. And to me, it's like the best book that's ever been written on success. And it's just a good book, Psycho Cybernetics. And the premise of the entire book is about how to use visualization to completely transform your life. And it really goes into the science behind why this stuff works. So here's the exercise. What I'd encourage you to do is at the beginning of each day, you can take however much time you want to take. See, it's a big deal that you not come up with an excuse. Oh, well, I ran out of time or I don't have enough time. Look, if you want to take 10 or 15 minutes to do this, that's going to have great benefit for you. If you only have 1 minute, it's still going to work. It's important that you understand that, that you don't need to take all day or climb to the top of a mountain or meditate for 6 years to transform. You can do this stuff in an instant. You just have to remember to do it. But here's the exercise. At the beginning of each day, why don't you start with 5 minutes? And what I'd encourage you to do is at the beginning of every day, take 5 minutes and in your mind, let your day play out like a movie. And as you let it play out, here's what I'd encourage you to do, is let it play out again with precision. What does precision mean? It means with clarity. So it's not just this fuzzy idea of, hey, I want to have a great day, right? Because, you know, you can have a great day many different ways. But envision exactly what you want to have happening. Envision exactly how you want people around you to respond. Envision exactly how you want to see yourself and your staff and your leaders responding to challenges. Envision everything that you want to see happening and just take a few minutes, even if you have 2 minutes or 5 minutes. Do this at the beginning of each day. And the most important part of it, by the way, is to actually envision how you want to feel as you go through your day. This is an exercise that I adopted. I had a coach who worked on this with me. Because I told him I was running into a problem, and the problem I was running into is I had so many important things to do, but I was never getting them all done. And instead of him trying to tell me to not do as much, because that doesn't always work, right? Sometimes you got a lot of important things you're doing throughout a day. You're going from an interview to a PC to another to a PDI to running training to running a meeting. And when you got that many important things and you can't just ditch them, what my coach shared with me is he said, John, what you need to do is at the beginning of your day, envision how you want to feel looking at your calendar as you go through each section of your day. And what happens is this, is when you go through this process, it's like a drug that lasts all day. And you'll get into the emotional state that you need to get into as you go through your day just from spending 5 minutes at the beginning of the day. Now, if you want to take this exercise to another level, here's how you can use this to help people around you. You know, this goes back to last month's call where we talked about, hey, the first question you've got to be able to answer or help somebody else answer is, what do they want to achieve? Well, what we're doing right now is we're talking about how this is actually a quality of people who perform at a peak level. They don't just know what they want, but they know with precision and they frequently go back to that thought and they do it with feeling, right? Well, this is how you can take your people to the next level. Is when they say, hey, well, hey, here's what I want to achieve, help them to get as much precision as possible with what they want to achieve. And using quality questions, you can do that. But remember, we can't take for granted that the reps that we're leading come into our offices as, you know, master goal setters. Most of them have never done that in their lives. But if you can help other people, when they say, here's what I want to do, that's why the question of what does that look like? What's that going to look like for you is such a valuable question. How are you? What is your day going to look like? How are you going to spend your time? Let's see what that looks like on a piece of paper. And you'd be blown away how for so many people, you might take for granted that if they say they want to sell $5,000 or they say that they know what they need to do to be prepared to give a talk or whatever, you think they're going to know how to use their time. But when you have them rehearse it mentally by kind of walking through it with them, you'd be surprised how much that'll affect other people. So again, the first pattern that we've talked about here is mentally rehearsing the desired future. And, you know, if you had to simplify everything I've just said, it's you got to always know what it is that you're going for. And to take it to the next level, you got to know with precision, frequency, and feeling. Here's the second pattern I want to talk about today. And these kind of build on each other, and they also build on the call that we ran last month. And the second quality we're going to talk about here, you know, this kind of gives you the solution to when somebody comes to you and they're not motivated, which, by the way, sometimes the most important person who has that feeling is ourselves, and we need to have a tool to fix it, right? Well, I'm going to give you right now what I consider to be the best tool to re-stimulate or spark or ignite that emotion inside of us. And it's a pattern that all peak performers have, and here's what it is. It's the ability to find purpose on purpose. The ability to find purpose on purpose. You know, some of you have heard me say this before, and I know sometimes this like scares a vector manager when they hear me say this before I finish it. When, if I'm giving a talk on a push period for reps, and when I'm teaching this concept, one of the things I often will say is I'll say, guys, selling knives in and of itself isn't very exciting. I mean, it's just, you're just selling knives, right? And what I like to point out to them is that the value of a push period is it's an opportunity to learn how to develop the skill of getting excited about something. I mean, think about it. What is it that makes selling knives 2 weeks exciting? If it's selling knives for 2 weeks, in and of itself, intrinsically, is not exciting. I could tell you right now, it's the most boring, tedious thing in the world. But what's the point? Because, see, the job of a leader, and all of you do this, and I'm just trying to give you a label so that you can understand why it's a great thing and why you should do more of it and why you got to use it as something to teach your people. Your job is to take anything and learn how to give it purpose. You know, if I'm coaching, I don't have this anymore because I'm working with higher level clients, but in the past, if I was coaching someone privately and they say, well, I don't know what my purpose is, or I don't, you know, why am I here? Is this the right thing? And I jump in and say, well, look, it's actually your job to create that. You have to come up with your purpose on purpose. You have to give it that reason. I had an opportunity last year to go to New Zealand. And if any of you have ever, in fact, I think many of you have traveled to other countries. Like, I think you guys went on a vector trip maybe to South America, and I think some of you went to a soccer game. Whether or not you were there, if you've ever been to another country where they play a sport, in New Zealand, it was rugby. And to me, rugby is totally foreign. I don't even know what's going on. But it was cool because we'd be driving through the country, through the mountains, and we'd find this field in the middle of nowhere, and it would be crowded with all these people, and there'd be like cows and sheep on the field, and then you got people playing rugby. And if you've been to another country and you've seen them playing a sport that to you means like nothing, right? If you saw a bunch of people playing rugby around here, someone would call the cops. I mean, no one would understand. There is no passion. There's no purpose. But in New Zealand, you have these people crowded around this field in the middle of this valley. There's nothing else going on, and they are intense. They're cheering, they're yelling, they're dancing, they're going crazy over it. And if you've seen this in another part of the world, like in South America, you go to a soccer game, you know, you better wear body armor. I mean, it's like a whole new deal. It's not like anything here in the States. You know, you thought your local NFL team got excited. No, you haven't seen anything. And if you... Well, my phone just cut out. I hope I didn't lose everybody. Well, someone will either send me a text or a note if it cut out. But if you've seen this happen, you know that what I'm talking about here is these people give these experiences purpose, and they do it on purpose. They choose to give themselves that fuel. You know, here's another way of looking at all this is when you know what it is that we want, when you can answer the question, hey, here's what I want my week to look like, or here's what I want my month to look like, or here's what I want my year to look like, or when you can help somebody else to answer that question. You know, what you're doing is you're giving them the direction. You're giving them the map. But another way of looking at it is creating purpose is like your fuel. That's what keeps you going. If you ever wonder, well, not only how do I stay motivated, but really how do I keep myself overcoming the challenges that I face every day? It's you have to have an answer to why are you doing this. That's what it means to create purpose on purpose is why. You know, I read a lot of autobiographies or just biographies of famous leaders. And one of the consistent patterns I've found is there's always a deep purpose to what people do whenever they create something really special. So what I'd encourage you to do, so how do you put this idea to work? Because it probably makes a lot of sense, but how do you use it? Well, I'd encourage you to just stop and at the most basic level. Make sure that when you think about what it is you want to achieve, right, that you also ask yourself, why are you doing this? And don't wait for somebody else to give you the answer. Create an answer on your own and make it exciting, make it empowering, let it drive you. You know, and there's, to me, there's two types of reasons, by the way. One type of reason is what I would call an external reason. You know, you might ask one of your branch candidates or you might ask a rep of yours, hey, you know, why do you want to go sell 10K for the push? And a lot of the reasons that these folks might give you initially might be what I'd call external, something like, you know, I want to be able to pay my tuition, make a little bit more money, you know, buy shinier wheels for my car. And that stuff's all good. You know, there's a great book called Talent is Overrated. And it's kind of a scientific research-based approach on what is it that leads to the top performers. And what they did is they studied musicians, athletes, entrepreneurs, political leaders throughout the span of, you know, a long span of history. And one of the things that they found is that top performers, a lot of them do have these external reasons, these more tangible material type things, but they found that the commonality was that almost every single performer had kind of like right beneath that a foundation of internal reasons. And I'd encourage you to be able to answer that question for yourself. Because, of course, if you can't answer it for yourself, there's a good chance that the people that you lead probably aren't really good at answering the question either. And that is, well, what are my internal reasons for why I'm doing what I'm doing? And, you know, you might have some right off the top of your head, but I'd encourage you to expand, to really make them deeper and give them some juice and some energy. You know, and this is when I teach reps about having big push periods. I'm just giving this to all of you now because I think it applies to anybody. I always share with them because they say, well, how did you stay motivated or what drove you or why did you always want to do what you did or why do I do what I do today? And my personal answer, and this doesn't mean it's the right answer, I'm just sharing from my personal experience, and you can adopt this 100% or adapt it a little bit if you want. But my answer was that ultimately what drove me as a rep, initially, yeah, it was the money and the trophies and the recognition. And I don't mind acknowledging that because, again, it's not a bad thing. But eventually it became the internal stuff. Eventually it became realizing that who I was becoming would never be the same again. Eventually it became understanding that when I push myself, see, I got so excited about the idea of pushing the crap out of myself for 2 weeks, not because I wanted to push the crap out of myself for the rest of my life, but because I knew that if I pushed myself after those 2 weeks, I would never be the same again. See, that was my reason. And then I would expand on it. I knew that if I pushed myself and expanded my capacity, it got a little bit more broad and detailed. I knew I would be a better leader. And now I know when I push myself, I'm going to be a better husband and a better father. And so these are all the reasons that I've created that are really internal. They're really just my own, and they really have nothing to do with anything other than just growth and contribution. And so I'd encourage you, all of you, to figure out an answer to that question. In fact, here's the exercise to take away from this. Write down the answer for you. Why is it that you want to do what you want to do this year? You know, a great phrase to remember is that reasons come first, answers come second. You know, in my world as a coach, and I do a lot of speaking to all different types of business people, and one of the mistakes I believe that I see people making is when they set New Year's resolutions, they do two things. First, they go, what do I want? And then the second thing they go is, well, how am I going to do it? And I don't know about all of you, but if we jump right into how are we going to do something, you know, you may have heard me say this before, a to-do list is like the least motivating thing in the world. If you just look at what you have to do before you stop and say, well, why am I going to do this in the first place? I can promise you, you'll run out of fuel. You might have a little bit of juice and a little excitement just by default, but you'll run out of fuel. You'll give in and you'll give up if you don't start by answering, hey, why am I doing this in the first place? So make sure you sit down and you write down your reasons for that. And if you want to take this concept to another level, teach this to your team. Teach this to your key staff. And what you want to do is you want to teach them, and I talked about this on the last call, how when you ask people, hey, what are your reasons for why you want to succeed? If this is the first time somebody's ever heard that concept, you have to literally teach it to them as you ask them the question. Because when we put people on the spot to try and answer a question and they don't even know how to answer it, we're not setting them up for victory. But I'll tell you the most important element of teaching others how to come up with reasons is you have to have your own first. So you can share with them your own example. That's why I did it the way I did a minute ago, is I gave my example, because it makes it easier for you to kind of maybe use some of what I said, because you might be able to relate to it. So what are your reasons? What's going to be your fuel that's going to keep you going? Ultimately, that's a huge pattern of leaders, is finding purpose on purpose. Think about that. Now, here's the third pattern we're going to talk about, and I'm just going to give you the answer first, and we're going to talk about this. And what we're going to talk about here is this. Peak performing leaders allow their self-image to precede reality. Now, don't tune out because this sounds like some complex phrase or you don't know if this applies to you. Just follow me for a minute. This might be the most important of these three patterns because it actually can allow you to put them all together. And I'll say it again. A peak performing leader allows their self-image to precede reality. And so what does this mean, by the way? They allow their self-image to precede reality. You know, to me, this is the missing link. We talk all the time about thinking big. I mean, how many of you have ever given a talk to your team about thinking big? Or how many of you have ever thought of that as a concept that sounds great, right? Like, all right, we're going to think big this year. That's exciting. And, you know, thinking big is a big deal. There's a great book called The Magic of Thinking Big. It's one of my all-time favorites. But I'll tell you, I think there's a gap. And there's a gap and there's a problem. And the problem that I see in our coaching company is that people often think big, but they don't end up doing big. that's like an oversimplification of it, right? They think big, but they don't do big. And so the question I'm always asking is why? And I'll tell you, this is the answer that I've observed. I didn't invent this. I learned this and I saw this through, you know, this year we'll have 500 people come through our private or semi-private coaching. And I'll tell you, this is what I see is the biggest thing that stops people from doing big, even though they can think big, is that when people stop and they think big, which is another way of, if you go all the way back to mentally rehearsing a desired future, that's kind of like thinking big, isn't it? I mean, hopefully when you rehearse your future, you're actually rehearsing something exciting. It's not you failing. That shouldn't be your desired future. But see, oftentimes we think big, but then I'll tell you what happens. And if you have a pen and a piece of paper, I'm going to have you draw a little diagram here if you can follow along. I want you to draw like a rectangular box, you know, almost like an outline of like a big screen TV. Just a rectangular, but just draw a rectangle, okay? And I want you to label that rectangle thinking big. And I want you to envision that that rectangle, or it could be a rectangle or even a circle. It actually doesn't matter what shape you use. But imagine that shape or that rectangle is that's your desired future. That's what you want to create. And my guess, because I know most of you pretty well, my guess is that this point so far on the call, this all makes sense. Like the idea of rehearsing and visualizing your future, my guess is that most of you heard that and you think, okay, I can see why that's probably somewhat of a good idea, right? However, here is where a lot of us mess up, and myself included. I have to fight this all the time, is that while we sit there and envision what we want, what happens is we often have inside of ourselves a conflicting story that's going on. So, in fact, if you want to take that rectangle and if you want to draw inside of it like a smaller rectangle, maybe with like using a dotted line, hopefully I haven't lost all of you, or a smaller circle using a dotted line. You see, we have this vision that we create sometimes, thinking big, and we might even walk around our offices or we might run meetings and we might tell our staff or tell ourselves or tell our reps, you know, these big visions that we have. But what happens is this smaller, more invisible line inside of the bigger one, what that represents is our self-image. You see, so often what happens is we have a story inside of ourselves, and I'm going to make this really simple for you here. And we have a story inside of ourselves, and here's how the story goes, is we think to ourselves, well, here's what I want to achieve. I want to have a $1 million summer, a $1 million year. You know, I want to lead my branches to be the best branches. And we start to envision it, but then that smaller self-image, what happens is there's a little voice inside of our heads that's saying, you're not really capable of that. Sure, you can envision it, but you don't really have the qualities to make that happen. You don't have the skills. You don't have the characteristics. How many of you, by the way, as I'm explaining this, you can see that you've done this before? How many of you can see that you've done this where you've thought about taking yourself to the next level, but you've got this conflicting voice, this little voice in your head that's saying, but that's not me, but I know I'm not yet ready to do that. I know I don't yet have the skills. And see, guess what ends up happening? You see, that inner story that we have about ourselves, which is really what I call or what everybody calls the self-image, that ends up being whatever we achieve. That's what drives our results. And see, if you ask me, what is your self-image, John? Well, another way of looking at it is this. Your self-image is really what you believe about yourself. What do you believe about yourself? And there's so many different types of beliefs that we have about ourselves. We have beliefs about what we're capable of. We have beliefs about our personalities. You know, I do a lot of work in the Eastern region, and someone that everybody knows is Jeff Gamboa. And I was working with a couple other leaders in that region, and we were talking about Jeff as an example. And everybody knows Jeff as someone who's energized and charismatic, and he has a personality that a lot of people look at and they go, it's magnetic and it's exciting, and it's helped him in different ways, right? Well, I had a couple other leaders who said, you know, but John, because we were talking about something that he does, and they said, but I just can't see myself being like him. How many of you have ever thought that before? How many of you have ever looked at somebody else, maybe someone you admire, and said, I just don't have that quality? You see, sometimes we have beliefs about our personality. We have beliefs about just who we can be in front of other people. And ultimately, these beliefs about what we're capable of and who we can be and our personalities, they end up defining the results that we generate. You know, Dan Cassetta actually talked about this quite a bit in Cutting Edge Sales, the book that most of you should have a copy of this. He talks in his chapter about how he presents a question, really. He says, is it great results that lead to a great self-image, or is it the other way around? Because ultimately what Dan is proposing is that what helped him to be a leader is he believes that part of being a leader is you have to build people's self-image up in order to help them get those results. Whereas so often it's so easy for us to fall into the trap of waiting for somebody to prove to us that they deserve us recognizing that they're capable of doing what they just proved. Do you follow that? Dan's point is really, look, as managers and leaders, we have to help other people to see within themselves capabilities and beliefs and qualities and skills that they don't yet see. And of course, we have to do it with ourselves as well. So now here's the big question. Because again, what we're talking about here is allowing our self-image to precede reality. Let's go all the way back to that and just make sure we know what that means. What that really means is, look, if you want to perform at a peak level, this is a common pattern amongst the very best world-class performers in the world, is that they see in their mind's eye themselves doing something even before they've done it, and they see their self as able to do it. Like Roger Bannister, the first guy that ran the 4-minute mile, when he was asked how he did it, what he said is he not only envisioned himself doing it, he not only rehearsed his desired outcome, and he obviously had a lot of purpose. He had some passion and purpose, so he had the fuel. But he also talked specifically when he was interviewed afterwards, he talked about how he needed to see himself as somebody who was actually capable of running the 4-minute mile. You see that there? That's the difference maker. You can't just envision what you want. You have to envision yourself as capable. He allowed his perception of himself to precede reality, meaning he allowed himself to have that winning self-image even before he really had, you know, tangible reason to say, I know I can do this. So let's put this all to work here, because this is a big one, and I know this stuff's kind of deep, and that's why we're running these calls. This isn't meant to be, you know, you notice, by the way, I'm not talking about, hey, a quality of peak performers is they take a lot of action, right? Well, this stuff today is about a layer right beneath that. It's the stuff inside of you that drives everything else. So how is it that you can transform your self-image? How do you do that? Because I know that there's always a skeptic out there who's listening to me, and they're thinking, John, well, you know, the problem I have with this is what you're trying to tell me is that, you know, I need to change who I am, or that I can really change who I am, and I don't want to change who I am. Well, look, here's how I want you to look at this. This is really, really important. And especially if you ever want to help somebody else to really come out of their shell, if you want to help somebody else to break through, if you want to help someone else to transform and just simply do what they've never done, you have to understand this right here. You're not asking them to change who they are. What you're doing is you're asking them to change which part of themselves they allow to show up. Do you follow that right there? I actually gave a message just like this several months ago to a public audience. This is a whole bunch of different entrepreneurs. And I was talking about this concept of self-image, and I was using different examples, and somebody stood up and they challenged me on this, because you got to realize people are going to have challenges with what I'm teaching you right now. And if you're having this challenge, I just want you to hear this example. This person stood up in front of a lot of people and said, John, you know, what you're telling me, are you telling me, because the person was, in this case, they were overweight and they wanted to lose weight. And he said, are you telling me that I'm just supposed to start telling myself that I am healthy? He said, John, that would be a bunch of BS, because look at me. He said, I can't just tell myself or play some mental little game. And the guy was kind of upset with me. He's like, because he felt offended, like this wasn't something he could apply. He said, I can't just tell myself that I'm healthy now and that's going to change me. Because he said, look, if I try and tell myself that, John, I'm still going to have a little voice that's saying, you're lying. Look at yourself in the mirror, right? But I gave him an example. I said, well, look, the point here is about finding the right qualities to draw out, right? You can't just tell yourself you're a millionaire, but maybe you can tell yourself that you're making millionaire decisions. I said this to the person. I said, well, look, you really only have two choices here. You can keep telling yourself you're unhealthy, and we all know the actions that's going to lead to. You're obviously aware of that. I said, but you don't have to tell yourself you're healthy. What you can do is you can tell yourself that you make healthy decisions. You follow that? So the point is, what I shared with this gentleman is I said, look, what we're trying to do is we're just giving you permission to draw out a different part of you. And I asked him, I said, look, I know I can't make you lose 10 pounds in 1 second, but don't you have the ability to change the type of decisions you make if you want to in an instant? And he got it. And the light bulb in his head went off. And he realized that changing his self-image wasn't some impossible thing. It was just a choice of which part of himself he was going to allow to start showing up. So let me give you a step-by-step formula so you can put this to work. So how do you transform your self-image so that it matches that ideal desired future, right? So that you close the gap between thinking big and doing big. And I hope you've stuck with me, because when you put all this to work, you see how it's not that complicated, but it is important to understand how we operate and why we do what we do. So here's step one, which is really what we already talked about, which is step one is envision your ideal future, right? Step one is envision your ideal future. You know, take the next month or the next campaign or the next year and just ask yourself, what do I want it to look like? Now, here's the second step. Second step is to identify, and I'm just going to pick, I'm picking the number 10, but you could pick a different number. You could use 5 or 7 or 15. The number is not as important as the process. Identify 10 qualities as you envision your ideal self, and identify 10 qualities that you see you've embodied in order to create that future. So it's almost like, for example, if you want to envision your office shipping $1 million this year, I want you to imagine yourself a year from now having just shipped $1 million. And imagine that you just watched the movie in your mind of seeing that play out. And this really is like a magical process. But when you do that, what I want you to do is I want you to look at who you've become and ask yourself, what are the qualities that I've embodied? You know, some of them might be skills you've developed. Some of them might be behaviors, day-to-day behaviors. Some of them might be even emotions that you choose to elicit, right? Because a lot of the times to get to the next level, it's not just about, hey, I need to do something differently. It's about, I need to operate with a different set of emotions, right? So I want you to ask yourself, number one is, what's my ideal future? And then the second step is, what are some qualities? Once I've created that future, you know, how did I get there? What are the qualities that I'm identifying as I envision that? Now, here's the third step, is to look at that list of qualities or skills or emotions or behaviors that is part of who you are when you create that ideal future, and ask yourself this question, okay? Which of these qualities has the biggest gap? Which of these qualities has the biggest gap? Ask yourself, where's the gap? Because one of the things that you'll find is all of you have the ability to do this. All of you have the ability to stop and just imagine. Be like a little kid. All of you have the ability to envision your ideal future. There's nothing that could ever stop you from doing that. And all of you have the ability to stop and look at, hey, what are the qualities that I have as I create that future? But then what you have to do is there's a moment where you have to address reality. And isn't that the job of a leader? You know, leaders need to not see things worse than they are, but they need to see things as they are. And sometimes as a leader, the most important reality we need to address is, where's the gap? Look, that's the person I want to become. Which of those qualities am I totally screwing the pooch on right now? Which ones am I totally dropping the ball? Which ones have I been in denial? Which ones have I been blaming other things on? Which ones have I been justifying? And then here's the fourth step, is after you look at that list and you identify the gaps, okay? And by the way, this isn't an exact science. I'm not presenting this as, it's not supposed to be an exact science, because you're human beings. When each of you is going to go through this process in a slightly different way. Don't get hung up on exactly which step, and if you do it exactly the way I describe it, if you get the overall process, no matter how you do this, it's going to help you to transform. So you look at that list and you identify the gap. So now you're like, well, what do I do now, right? I've identified this gap of qualities that I need to really draw out more, but I haven't been drawing these out. They've been at a level 3 and I need them at an 8 or a 10. So then here's what you do now. Step number 4 is you pick one quality per week, and here's what you do. Let's say one of the qualities you identified, I'll give you an example. Let's say you envision your ideal future and you realize that one of the 10 or 7 qualities that you identify is that you need to be, let's say you need to be more patient with people, right? Let's say that's, I'm making this up. Let's say you need to be more patient. You realize you've just been impatient. You're impatient in your conversations. You're impatient as you lead other people. And so you've identified this is one of the qualities that's got a pretty big gap. And so you go, okay, 4th step, I'm going to work on this quality this week. And here's what you do, is every day you do 2 things. At the beginning of the day, when you go through that 5-minute visualization that we talked about earlier, what I want you to do is I just want you to say these words, I am patient. That's it. I am patient. And say it over and over and over again. Maybe write it on a little 3x5 card, carry it around all day. And give yourself permission to be patient. Say, I am patient. I am a patient human being. I'm a patient leader. I'm a patient person. And then here's what you do to really cement this in. Because I know what some of you are thinking. You're thinking, John, I'm going to do this, but I'm going to have a little voice saying, no, you're not. You're a liar, right? See, here's how you really cement this in. And this is how you put it all together. Is you pick this quality where you see there's a gap. And every day you tell yourself, I am patient, I am patient. And the other thing you say to yourself in the morning is you give yourself one symbolic action that you're going to take that day that represents you being patient. Just pick one. Who cares what it is? Who cares if it's really big or if it's really little? The point is you pick one action, and I say it's symbolic because look, the most important thing to do anytime you make a decision is to do something with it. So if you're going to tell yourself, I am patient, it's super important that at the same time as you envision your day, you take at least 1 second. You don't need to take 10 hours to do this. You take 1 second or 10 seconds and you make a commitment and you say, and to exemplify my patience, today I will blank, right? Whatever it means. And see, by doing that, you now can't tell yourself that you're lying. You're no longer a liar when you say you're patient because you're actually going to take some action. That's why I'm telling you, make it an easy one. Set yourself up to win. And I've gone through this process for myself over and over again. Whenever I identify, and I do this regularly, I try and stop and go, hey, what about me needs to change to get to where I want to go? You know, hey, I need to be more organized, okay? So I am masterful at staying organized. I make that one of my affirmations every day. And then I'll say, okay, and to exemplify this today, I'm going to operate the entire day with a clear desk. Now, some of you might hear that and go, John, that would be like moving mountains for me. Well, for me, it wasn't that hard. It was like moving one thing off my desk. But see, now by taking that action, I'm not going to have the little voice that's incongruent, that's saying, well, you're telling yourself one thing, but you're not that. And what I just gave you here, these 4 steps, if you go through this again and again and again and again, you'll be blown away at how you can transform your image of yourself and allow a different part of you to draw out. Now, I didn't tell you that this was going to be a light call. I didn't tell you this was going to be easy, simple stuff. If it was, it wouldn't be worth your time. If it was, you wouldn't even be listening, right? This stuff is a little bit advanced. It's kind of deep, but I'm telling you, if you're willing to put in the energy, if you're willing to take what I've given you today and just put them to work in a very simple way, you will see that you can perform at a peak level and you can get yourself at a level 10. Now, I hope that as I've given you these 3 patterns, you've noticed that putting them to work, it doesn't require a lot of time. If you ever tell yourself, I can't implement something, or I can't grow myself, or I can't learn, or I can't develop myself because I don't have the time to do this stuff, that's the worst lie in the world. Because I can promise you that if you spend 60 seconds reviewing these notes every day, the results you're going to see are going to be exponentially better than if you don't do it at all. So here's what we're going to do. I've just broken down the 3 qualities of peak performing leaders. And really to put it all together, in summary, here's what we've talked about. 1 is always know what you want with precision, frequency, and feeling. 2 is find that purpose on purpose. It's really always having an answer to the question of why am I doing this? You know, as you envision your day and you use some of these action steps I shared, don't just look at what you want to do, but ask, hey, why am I doing it? And then third, we talked about allow your self-image to precede reality. And I know I gave you this overcomplicated 99-step formula for how to break yourself down and build yourself up and all this crap, but look, here's the deal. If you actually read through what I just shared with you, it's the type of thing you can do in an instant. Some of you probably did it in your head during the call. That's fine. So these are the types of things you can put to work right away. Now, what I want to do now is this topic to me, I think it's really important stuff, and I'm hoping you agree. And I can see who's on the line right now, and I know a lot of your leaders are on the call. And, you know, what I'd love to do is I think I want to just open it up. If anybody has either questions about applying this or comments, you know, I know for some of you, you may have heard this and realize that, you know, I may have given you a label to stuff that you already knew intuitively, but I may have given you some, you know, a structure around some ideas that you realize are going to help you. And if you want to comment on that, on how you're excited to put these work, or you want to comment on anything that I shared, or you have any question about implementing any of this, I'm going to open that up right now. And if you want to share again, just push *7, and that should open up your phone. Again, just push *7. And if anybody has any questions, comments, ideas, again, if you're a leader on the line, this is also an opportunity if you want to highlight for if there's anything I said and you thought to yourself, gosh, I hope people understand this point that he said, or, you know, here's another way of explaining what John just said so that we can understand this or apply it to us. Anything you want to share right here, this is your opportunity. So the line is open. If you want to share, just push *7. Go ahead and jump in, anybody who'd like to share. Now, not all at once. We might flood the conference line. So just one at a time. I can see a couple people pushing buttons on their phone. If anyone wants to jump in and share, push *7. Again, push *7, and it should open up your phone if you have any questions or thoughts.
Hey, John.
Yeah, who's this? Go ahead.
Ben Taka again.
Hey, go ahead, Ben.
I worked myself through that. I need my implementable step this week is to be on time to everything.
Awesome. Awesome. Okay, is that going to help you?
Absolutely.
That's cool. Anything else, or just wanted to share that?
That's all I wanted to share. That just made me realize that's the one thing I need to do, one of the 10.
Yeah, that's awesome, Ben. Appreciate it. And that's okay that you've already began. Who else? Anyone else want to either share any thoughts, ideas, or questions? Go ahead. This is your chance.
Hey, John, can you hear me?
Yeah, go ahead. Who's this?
This is Derek again. Hey, just wanted to real quick ask you, what is your personal method of, obviously, you know, your quality that you want to work on? How do you capture those? Do you journal in the morning and just review those every morning and just pick one out?
Yeah, that's a good question. I do journal, Derek. I don't do it every day, but I journal once a week, and I do different planning. I'll tell you that my method, I'm a very visual person, and so one of the things that I do is my time management is at the beginning of the day, I go through that exercise where I spend 5 minutes a day rehearsing my day. And I envision with a lot of detail, like I imagine that I'm a movie watching myself, which sometimes might sound really boring if I'm sitting at my desk all day, but I imagine like what I'm getting done and I imagine how I want to feel and who I want to be. And what I do, Derek, is when I imagine that stuff, I give descriptive labels to it. I don't just watch it and think to myself, looks good. I watch it and think to myself, I'm focused. I can see myself as energized. I can see myself as totally joyful. I can see myself as connected with the people I'm working with. I can see myself as having a hell of a lot of fun, because if I'm not having fun, then life sucks. Like, so when I use those descriptives, then I might stop, Derek, and ask myself, which of these things that I just saw as I envision my day or my week or my month, which of those am I totally screwing up on? Are there any of these where I'm telling myself I see myself doing it, but I haven't been doing it. And I don't. It's not more complicated than that for me. I just, it's a regular practice for me. And I know this isn't a habit for a lot of you, if this is the first time you've heard of doing something like this, but it's just a regular habit for me to check in and ask myself, hey, where's the gap? What's the difference between how I'm behaving or how I'm feeling and what I need to be doing?
Very good. I know you also recommended a book. Was it Cybernetics?
Psycho-Cybernetics.
Psycho-Cybernetics, okay.
Yeah.
Thanks, John.
Spell that one out.
Hey, John, this is Sean McGinnis.
Hey, go ahead.
I have a quick question. When you were talking about that, and sometimes, you know, I'm looking back at while you were talking, and I see there's more than one thing, more than two things that are, you know, affecting me that I know I need to change and I want to change. And you said pick one per week. How do you know when you've completely gone over that and you're ready to go on to the next thing?
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, that's a good question. You know, Sean, I don't know if I have some exact answer to that question, because I think ultimately none of this is ever an exact science. But here's the bottom line, Sean, is you might have qualities or skills that you might want to work on for an entire year or for a month or for 6 months. And the reason why the way I presented it is one per week is because of this. If I were to say, hey, go fix every one of your issues right now, no one would do anything ever. So I'd rather just say pick one a week. And, you know, the bottom line is you can pick more than one area to work on. But the reason I outlined it that way is because what's behind that is I really want to encourage all of you to do something with this. You know, for some of you, you might sit down and go, well, here's three qualities and here's three actions I'm going to take today to exemplify that I'm embodying these qualities. And what you can do is, Sean, you can just stop once a week. I'm hoping most of you have regular times that you plan. Like, as an executive, you have to have regular times that you plan. And when you sit down and you plan, that's when you can stop. And when you plan, this should be part of your weekly planning process. So you go, okay, well, here's what's supposed to happen this week. So let me stop and check in based on how I want to see it happen and based on how I operated last week. Where do I still have a gap? And I think it's important that we forgive ourselves, because we're never going to be perfect and we're never going to have every quality at a level 10. The whole idea here is not to become a perfect leader, but the whole idea is to continually make progress. Progress is what makes us happy, right? Does that help? There's a long-winded answer to your simple question.
Yeah, that definitely helps a lot. Thanks.
Yeah, thanks for asking. I appreciate it. I know some of this stuff is different or new for some of you, and these are really good questions I'm sure other people may have had. Any other questions or thoughts out there? Go ahead.
Hey, John. Eric Ward.
Hey, Eric. How you doing? Go ahead.
Psycho-Cybernetics. Is that by Maxwell Maltz?
That's right, and I would buy the new updated version.
Thank you.
Well, we've still got a couple minutes here. Any other thoughts, questions, ideas?
Hey, John.
Yeah, go ahead.
Hey, this is Derek again. Do you journal? I know you're always making changes, if you're like me, to, you know, imagining your ideal lifestyle. Do you keep track of those changes, like, or is it something you're always continuously adding to? Like, how do you track that, obviously?
What specifically are you asking me about? What do I track? Tell me again.
Yeah, whenever you're talking about imagining, like, very vividly your ideal lifestyle.
Yes.
I know your ideal lifestyle, that definition is always changing. How do you track that?
Yeah, well, that's a good question. Well, I mean, there's a couple of things that I do that I have coaching programs that I've gone through that have given me certain tools and structures to use.
Mm-hmm.
You know, on a simple level, Derek, I have, for example, my business goals. And those are written up, and those don't change other than maybe every 6 to 12 months. But then what I continually envision those goals playing out. And in my personal life, to me, personal and business it blends together. There isn't a distinction. I don't want to feel like there's a difference between work and play for me. I want my work to be my play. So for me, when I think about how do I want my life to look, it's my personal and professional life. How does that all blend together? And I do have a document that I created where I've kind of answered the question, what do I want my – and the question that I use is, what do I want my typical ideal day to look like? It's not like the, you know, what do I want my dream day to look like? Well, my dream day, I wouldn't be in my office. I'd maybe be on a mountain somewhere. So my typical ideal day, and I do have that typed out and described, and I have it put on a wall, so I read it pretty regularly. I look at it because some of it makes me laugh. Some of it inspires me. And so I have that, and I wrote that about 6 months ago, and I haven't made any changes to it, but I do continually ask myself when I look at specific situations, you know, to visualize specifically how I want to see things play out. And I don't always write down all the answer to that question. I don't think it's a bad idea. I think it's good if you write out your answer. But if I have a run that I'm training for, you know, I spend time envisioning that run. I do it while I'm actually training. But I don't write that out or journal it specifically.
Okay.
I can see there's still quite a few people on the line. Any other questions or thoughts out there?
John, this is Lloyd. How could you take some of those same concepts and use it in a more macro sense, maybe to influence culture on a team, like a manager maybe, you know, trying to apply this towards his team, or a division manager to his division?
Yeah. Well, I think my thought on that would be that if a division manager wants to change something culturally, that first they have to be able to describe and clarify how they want it to change, and there's got to be descriptive answers to how they want it to change. And then if they were to go through and let's assume they've got purpose because they're a DVM, assume they've got good reasons why. This third step of, hey, identifying qualities to change, the difference here is it's no longer just about changing myself. It's about also changing other people. And, Lloyd, I got two thoughts on that. One is that I would encourage anybody, whether this could be a DVM or a DM who wants to make a cultural change, anytime they want to change something culturally, to always stop and ask themselves, what am I doing that's currently reflecting what's happening right now that's not what I want? And that's a very difficult question to ask. A lot of people, myself included, don't always want to ask that because of ego or whatever. But it's important that a leader be able to stop and go, okay, if there's problems right now, first thing I need to do is identify all the ways that I'm part of that problem. Because one of the things that I've found, Lloyd, and I work with a lot of DVMs, is that when they try and change culture within their division, a lot of the problems that are there are because it's a reflection either of that DVM right now or that DVM who they used to be. So how do you deal with that? By the way, does that make sense, what I just shared?
Yeah, perfect.
Okay, so here's how to deal with that, and this I think anybody can apply this, is if I'm a division manager and there's problems with our culture and I want to change them and I've identified what they are, first step that I just shared is I have to be willing to point out how I created them. If I can't do that, nothing's going to change. How I either created them based on how I'm operating today or how I operated in the past. Because what happens is people always have selective memories. It doesn't matter if I'm the most organized on-time person now. If I was organized or if I was unorganized or not on time, or I partied with my people in the wrong way or whatever, that's what people are going to choose to remember when they justify them behaving how they want to behave. So then here's the next step. How do I fix it all? Well, the way I fix it is I can't just go to my division and say, here's how we're going to change, because they will be defensive because they think I'm just telling them to change. So what I would do, Lloyd, is I would go to my division and I would say, hey, guys, I want to share with you that I've come to realize, or I've discovered, or I've become aware that because of how I'm doing things now or how I did things in the past, it is costing all of us. See, it's about starting with ownership. So if I'm a DVM, I'd say that to my DMs, because by starting from a place of I'm owning our problems, they cannot be as defensive, because I'm the one who caused the problem. I'm not, because normally when we come to a group and say we need to change, the way people hear that is that I'm telling them you need to change. But if I come to them and say I've realized that here's how I've caused this problem, there's no defense. So then what I'll say is, I've come to realize that I needed to change. Here's what I did to change. And then I've also come to realize that we need to adopt that same change. So those are the kind of the three steps there. But it has to happen in that order, because if it doesn't, then people think you're a hypocrite, or how do I know that you've changed, or you're just telling me I'm the problem. But if it's a whole cultural shift, it's got to start, number one, the manager deciding that they are the problem, or how they were in the past was the problem. It's one and the same. Number two, when they go to their people, they have to come from a place of owning it and then explaining next how they've made a change and why that's going to benefit themselves and then everybody else, and now why as a culture we need to change. Last thing I'll say on this, Lloyd, is what's his name? The Rudy Giuliani wrote a book on leadership, and he talked about how there's always two ways to announce something. One way to announce something is to go out and announce that we're changing something and then to go try and make the change. The other way to do it is to make the change first, prove that it works, then make the announcement. And to me, Lloyd, changing a culture, it has to be the latter more often than not. Otherwise, people will be skeptical or defensive. It's got to come from the leader having changed first, exemplified it, shown how that's given them better results. So there's my really long answer to what I thought was a really good question. Does that help at all? Does that make sense?
No, that was great.
Cool. Any either follow-up questions or thoughts about that topic, or any other questions on getting an individual? And I love what about that question, Lloyd, is you brought it to the level of, okay, how does this apply to a team or an organization? And hopefully what I'm showing all of you is that it does, that you can take these concepts and they apply for anything, whether it's a person or a whole team. I see there's still a lot of people on the line, which just tells me you guys are very comfortable with silence, which is a great quality. Again, if you have a question and you're wondering why I can't hear you, you probably have to press *7. Press *7 if anybody has any final questions or thoughts. We can hang out for another minute or so. Any other questions or thoughts or follow-up questions or thoughts on anything that I've shared at the end of the call here? Again, if you do have any questions or thoughts, you'd have to press *7. All right. Well, then. Oh, there we go. Yeah, who's this? Go ahead.
This is Sean McGinnis again.
Hey, go ahead, Sean.
Hey, I was looking over the notes, and it says kind of define your own motivation. It's the ability to find purpose on purpose and to create your own answer. One of my problems is being able to find my own motivation right now, what motivates me, and it says create your answers on your own, the internal reasons. But that, I think that's where I'm struggling. So where do you find that internal reason? Like, how do you do that? What are some other exercises besides just writing it down on what you want? What are some other things that you would suggest to be able to find your motivation?
Well, what you really need is examples or thought joggers, right?
Yeah.
Okay, so what a great question. What a great question. Go and interview other people. Go talk to other top performers. Go talk to someone who's doing exactly what the level you want to get to and ask them. Say, hey, I'm just curious. I'm at a place where I'm trying to define what I'm doing or why I'm doing it. What are the reasons that drive you? And go to the very top people and ask them. Shoot them an email. Ask them at a conference. What drives you? And write down their reasons and realize you can adopt other people's reasons. Because ultimately, at some point, they went from not having that reason to just deciding, well, that's going to be my purpose right now. So that's one thing you can do is go to other people. For me, Sean, I do a lot of reading and interviewing and listening and watching and talking to people. So I'm open to being inspired by the purposes that other people have, because I'm a big believer in always trying to evolve my reasons for doing what I'm doing, because it's just important to me. I just think it's a big deal. I think that the quality of my life is always going to reflect the quality of my purpose behind what I'm doing. So does that help at all?
It helps a lot.
Okay, cool.
Thank you.
Shauna, I'll get, since no one else is chiming in, I'll add to that. Another way that you can come up with an answer is think about your future. A lot of the times it's easier to define your purpose if you define it in terms of what kind of future you want. You know, I know a lot of you might be listening in and maybe you don't yet have a family, but maybe one day you will. And maybe some of you are going to be doing other things other than running an office. Maybe you'll be doing other things within Vector. Maybe you, some of you have ambitions of being a DVM. You know, if you're looking for something, having some type of purpose is better than nothing. And one way to come up with something is just to think about how doing well at what you do today, overcoming the challenges you overcome today, is going to serve you as a blank in the future. It's going to make you a better this or a better that. You can fill in the blank, but make it about how what you do today is going to serve you in the future. All right, we still got a lot of people on the line. I'm happy to hang out for a couple more minutes here. Any other questions or thoughts related to the topic today? All right, we are good. We are done.
Well, John, thank you. And our next call, John, is February 3rd.
I think so. Let me see. Yeah, February 3rd.
At same time, same channel, right?
Same time, same channel. Everyone will get an email following this call with the recording and a transcript in a couple days.
Great.
And then they'll get an email before the next call.
Fantastic. So if everybody can maybe plug that into your phones or your calendars on your computer, whatever. Also, our next region-wide conference call is January 18th at 9:30 p.m. Central Standard Time. So those are our next two calls. Again, that's January 18th at 9:30 p.m. for our next region call, and our next John Berghoff coaching leadership call, February 3rd at noon Central. John, thanks for the extra time and for your patience today and all of your leadings and answers to the different questions that people have. And, I'm sure that on our next call, I'm sure they've seen the benefits of your question-answer session, we'll have more questions prepared and we'll have more updates as we have two calls now to implement before February 3rd. And we'll look forward to hearing many more success stories from the implementation. So everyone have a good one. Thanks again, John. And we'll see you on February. Oh, actually, we'll see you at your banquet, John.
Yeah, that's right. I'll see you then.
Yeah, look forward to it. Take care.
All right. Take care.